And now, live from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
All right, here I am. Hello. Glad you could make it back, Michael. No, it was it's quite an experience having my spine opened up and worked on. I'm still in recovery, got some rehab to go through. But the surgery in and of itself was a success, according to my surgeon, who is one of the best in the history of the human race, as far as I'm concerned. But I appreciate Bob Kincaid filling in for me and your patience while we were Kathy and I were dealing with post-operational stuff. If you've gone through surgery, you know what I'm talking about. And now I fully understand why Percocet should be banned. Oh, God. What a drug. Anyway, I have to tell you, the first few days after surgery, I was in a fog. I'm not really sure what was occurring, but vis-a-vis the Trump saga. But I have caught up a little bit in the past 24 hours, and it's pretty horrible. I mean, I don't know what I expected. Just because my ass was out of commission, it didn't mean that things are going to stop. But I had no idea things would get this bad. So here we are. Last night, I was watching Rachel Maddow right before the Percocet kicked in, and all of a sudden, she came on with breaking news, and the breaking news was Michael Schmidt at the New York Times had somehow, bless his heart, got his hands on the areas and the questions that Mueller wants to ask this orange monster that's squatting in the White House. And I listened to what Rachel had and read some of it. It was a last-minute thing for her. The program she had planned last night, as so often happens in broadcast, had to be set aside in order to deal with the breaking news. But in the New York Times this morning, Michael Schmidt's article in its in entirety is there, and the questions that Mueller wants to ask Trump and what those questions mean. And it's a real study. When you read through this, it's a real study in good investigative work. I think it was made clear from the beginning that Robert Mueller, having been the former head of the FBI, among other intelligence positions, was nobody to mess with. That no matter how much Trump opened his mouth to change feet, no matter how much bravado and bullshit that Trump was willing to dump out on his brain-dead base, no matter to what degree Trump tried to hide, you can't hide from Robert Mueller. And I think that's apparent in the questions that he has prepared. Now, the big question is whether or not this cowardly piece of human waste that squats in the White House will take on the responsibility of being the president of the United States and, in effect, the chief law enforcement officer, and submit to the questions that this special counsel has prepared for him. Trump being a thug, a criminal, a grifter, a lying prick, will probably not. He will come up with some bullshit reason why the president of the United States is not going to submit himself to these questions. However, as of late this afternoon, it was clear that Trump had no shitty little tweet to put out there about what Mueller, through the New York Times, has revealed that he is going to be asking this phony bastard that squats in the White House. So this first hour, I want to go over some of these questions and the reason for them, just for the sake of my refreshing myself with what Rachel said last night and on the chance that you didn't have a chance to see these. The questions fall into categories based on four broad subjects. And I think three of those subjects have to do with obstruction of justice. Now, the truth is, collusion, as we should all know at this point, is not a crime. So when Trump has been wandering around the landscape, beating his chest, screaming, "No collusion, no collusion," the proper answer to that was, "Who gives a shit, Donald? Sit down and shut up." What we're talking about here is obstruction of justice. And I think this is what's going to end this phony, belligerent, ugly presidency. Because I think once the evidence is out there, whether or not Trump subjects himself to what every other American would have to subject himself or herself to, and that is questioning from a special counsel. Once that occurs, if it occurs, it'll be up to the Congress to do something about what Robert Mueller puts together. Remember, Robert Mueller does not have the power to initiate impeachment against Trump. He does not have – it's arguable whether or not he has the power to indict him. And even if he does have the power to indict a sitting president – that would wind up in the courts, the federal court system, for probably a couple of years, arguing this and arguing that and working its way up the chain and down the chain until eventually it would come before the U.S. Supreme Court. The issue or issues that were decided during the Nixon fiasco, the issues decided by the Supreme Court, had to do with the turning over of the tapes to the special prosecutor at the time, which Nixon said he had a right to withhold because of executive privilege, and the Supreme Court said no. That issue is not present here. So it may be the best outcome of all of this will be that Mueller puts together a damning, condemning, indicting, comprehensive report of what this filthy asshole did as president of the United States. It gags me to say that. Put it together and then turn it over to the Congress. It is up to the Congress to decide whether or not to remove this moron from office. Now, if it's turned over to a Republican Congress, it'll probably be buried. Everybody will be able to read it, obviously. Remember what Ken Starr did with his investigation of Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and the most intimate parts of their illicit affair. Ken Starr had no problem dumping the entire goddamn thing on the internet 20 years ago, which was a clear indication of the kind of perversity that existed inside Ken Starr. Now, whether or not Mueller releases the entire report to the internet remains to be seen. I would think that's what he would do because I think Mueller is a type of prosecutor who wants the American people to see the results of his work, not prosecutor but counsel, to see the results of his work. So one way or the other, you and I are going to know what conclusions the special counsel, Robert Mueller, has arrived at as a result of this investigation. Now, these questions, according to Michael Schmidt, are not quoted verbatim, and some of them were condensed. But one thing to keep in mind as I go through some of these, these questions are picture a map of a river, and the river has all kinds of tributaries that flow into it. This is kind of reverse of that. Every question that Trump answers is going to result in 1, 2, 10, 20 more questions, each of which will in turn result in more questions. So the fact that these are the questions that Mueller has put together here at the beginning simply doesn't mean that this is as far as the questioning will go. And this is one of the reasons that the Trump – any attorney that has been around this asshole Trump, this is the reason they don't want him to sit down in a one-on-one basis or two-on-two or six-on-six basis. But at least they don't want him to sit down and be confronted with direct questions from Mueller's prosecutorial team. The reason being, first, Trump is a goddamn liar. The man cannot tell the truth. Given a choice of truth and a lie, Trump will always opt for the lie, unless the truth somehow glorifies him, at least in his mind. So number one, Trump is a liar. And down that road lies perjury and some serious shit. Number two, Trump cannot stop talking once he starts. He is his own worst enemy because he thinks what he's saying is so important. It's so critical to the discussion at hand. And that he is so bright, so intelligent, knows so much about everything that his answers go on and on and on. If you want an example of that, go to the New York Times archives and look at some of the Q&A sessions that the Times editorial board had with Trump during the campaign and subsequent to the campaign. Another quick example is what happened on Fox News on – was that Saturday, Kathy? When Trump called into Fox News Friday or Saturday morning and just had diarrhea of the mouth, couldn't stop talking about his relationship with Michael Cohen. And Avenatti, what's Avenatti's first name? Michael Avenatti, Stormy Weather's attorney, just sat there smiling and beaming and getting another lawsuit against Trump ready. Trump is such an asshole. I mean, I can't – stop it, Malloy. Of course he's an asshole. All right.
Here's something for you.
Oh, Kathy just hollered. Here's something for you. Okay. Let me see what I have here. Okay, I'll get to this the first break. Okay. Where are we? Okay. This group of questions is related to Michael Flynn, the former national security advisor who is probably in the most serious trouble after Manafort. First question, what did you know about phone calls that Mr. Flynn made with the Russian ambassador, Sergei Kislyak, in late December 2016? Now, these questions revolve around whether Trump tried to obstruct justice to protect Flynn from prosecution. His phone calls with Kislyak are at the heart of that inquiry, the phone calls between Kislyak and Flynn, and whether or not Trump knew about it or maybe even ordered him. During those calls, Flynn urged Russia not to overreact to sanctions that had just been announced by the Obama administration. Now, Trump's aides publicly denied that sanctions were discussed. And when he was questioned by the FBI, Flynn denied it as well. So Mueller wants to know whether Flynn was operating on Trump's behalf with his questions. Prosecutors may already know the answer, because Flynn has already pleaded guilty to lying and is cooperating with investigators. You know that old rule, a good prosecutor or a good attorney never asks a question for which he or she doesn't already have the answer. And Trump, being the ignorant piece of human waste that he is, he doesn't understand that. So he's going to hang himself. In January, the Washington Post columnist David Ignatius revealed Flynn's phone calls with Kislyak. Ignatius of the Washington Post questioned whether those conversations had violated a law prohibiting private citizens from attempting to undermine American policies. In February, the Washington Post revealed the true nature of Mr. Flynn's conversation with Mr. Kislyak. And those reports came out February 8th and 9th, 2017. So Mueller wants to know, among other things, whether Trump feared that his national security advisor had broken the law and then tried to shield him, Trump, from the consequences. And I would hazard a guess here that Flynn didn't do a damn thing that wasn't okayed personally by Trump, but we'll see. The next question, what did you know? These are questions to Trump. What did you know about Sally Yates' meeting with Mr. Flynn? Now, Sally Yates, you remember, was the acting attorney general for the first week of the Trump administration, holdover from Obama. And she twice warned the White House that Flynn was lying and that those lies made him vulnerable to Russian blackmail. And you know what happened to Sally Yates for telling the truth? She got fired. That's what these rotten bastards are. Every single one of them, every one of them is a liar. Everyone who is associated with Trump, even what's his name? Who's the his chief of staff right now?
John Kelly.
Kelly. Even Kelly has revealed himself to be a total liar. Now, we're recording this in the afternoon on Tuesday. By the time this airs later on this evening, he may be gone. But Kelly is a liar. Every single one of these people are liars. And keep in mind that a couple of them are flag rank officers. They're 3- and 4-star generals and admirals, and they're liars. How does that make you feel? Anyway, no one from the White House has ever said how much Trump knew about the warnings from Sally Yates, which Trump possibly never knew about. He doesn't know shit about anything. Next question. How was the decision made to fire Flynn on February 13th, 2017? The background of that, 18 days after Sally Yates issued her warning, Flynn was asked to resign. The White House said that Trump lost confidence in Flynn because he had lied. But the that's a merit badge if you lie, not a reason to be fired in the Trump administration. But the White House has never fully explained why, after learning about the lie, officials waited so long to act. Next question. After the resignation, what efforts were made to reach out to Mr. Flynn about seeking immunity or possible pardon? The Times recently revealed that when Michael Flynn – it's Michael Flynn, right? When he began considering cooperating with the FBI, Trump's lawyers floated the idea of a pardon. Mueller wants to know why. I would hope to shout. All right, some questions related to James Comey, former FBI director. First question, what was your opinion of Mr. Comey during the transition? Now, the questions about Comey relate to whether Trump fired Comey last year to shield Flynn or anyone else from prosecution. Trump has denied that. He says he fired Comey because of his mishandling of the FBI's investigation into Hillary Clinton's use of a private email server. And if you believe that, I have a bridge I'd like to sell you that links a couple of islands in the South Pacific. Jesus Christ. The question's important because if Trump truly was upset about the Clinton investigation, he would have shown an early distaste for Mr. Comey, which he never did. You know, and I know, and Mueller knows, and every goddamn body in America knows why Trump fired Comey, because he would not back off from the investigation into what Flynn had done, A, and B, Comey felt that he had an obligation to be loyal to the Constitution of the United States and not this orange bumblefuck who resides in the White House. So that's why it was fired. Next question. What did you think about Mr. Comey's intelligence briefing on January 6, 2017 about Russian election interference? Now, that briefing revealed that American intelligence agencies had concluded that Russian operatives did, in fact, get involved in our last presidential election to hurt Clinton and boost Trump. Now, Trump has repeatedly tried to cast doubt on all of that, and he said he believes the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, who also denies any interference. Trump will believe this murderous, miserable dictator in Russia before he'll believe his own intelligence agencies and Justice Department. That is a mindfuck. Next question. What was your reaction to Mr. Comey's briefing that day about other intelligence matters? Now, this question addresses documents written by the retired British spy Christopher Steele, who said that Russia had gathered compromising information on Trump. The documents, which became known as the Steele dossier, also claim that the Trump campaign had ties to the Russian government. Comey privately briefed Trump about these documents. See, I guess at the beginning, Comey really did believe that if he presented truth and facts and light and air to the president, the response would be in kind. He didn't realize he was dealing with a fucking spider who lived in the shadows and only came out to bite people. Jesus Christ. All right, Kathy, let's take a quick break here, if you don't mind. We will come back and continue with some of these questions and what they possibly mean.
And them that was caught in a cup are all rich and free, but they chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true.
We have our first 50% sponsor special. You remember I talked about it before my little engagement with a surgeon, that for the month of May, all the sponsorships would be half off. Instead of $100, it's $50. So the first one for the month of May is from Bob B. His message: thank you, Mike and Kathy, for your passionate defense of the 99%. Thank you, Bob. Now, remember, these sponsorships are available now. $50 for 2 hours. I'll read your message at least three times. It's the best deal on earth, and besides, it helps buy the gauze bandages that I'll probably continue to use for a while. Jesus Christ. Anyway, Bob B., thank you very much. We appreciate your support, pal. Okay, back to the questions from Special Counsel Robert Mueller. The next question: what was the purpose of your January 27th, 2017 dinner with Mr. Comey? And what was said? Ooh. A few weeks after his briefing, Comey was called to the White House for a, you know, private dinner. Sounds like something out of a goddamn mafia novel, doesn't it? I want you to come over for dinner. Now, don't bring your wife. Just come by yourself, all right? Comey's notes say that Mr. Trump raised concerns about the Steele dossier, and he said he needed loyalty from Comey. And, of course, that question is the one that touches on Trump's real motivation for firing Comey. He was dismissed because he was not loyal and would not shut down an FBI investigation. Now, that's a conclusion I'll come to. That's a question that Mueller wants to ask the orange asshole. What was the purpose of your February 14th meeting? Now, this is a couple of weeks later with Mr. Comey, and what was said. This was a key moment. Comey testified that the president told him in that meeting, "I hope you can see your way clear to letting this go, to letting Flynn go." Of course, Trump says it never happened, but Trump is a goddamn liar. He lies about everything. Next question. What did you know about the FBI's investigation into Mr. Flynn and Russia in the days leading up to Mr. Comey's testimony on March 20th, 2017? It's hard to remember all this. You know, this thing makes Watergate almost look like a minor event. But Comey's testimony publicly confirmed that the FBI was investigating members of the Trump campaign for possible coordination with Russia. Mueller wants to know what role that revelation played in Mr. Comey's firing. Next question. What did you do in reaction to the March 20th testimony? That was when he appeared before Congress. Describe your contacts with intelligence officials. The Post, Washington Post, reported that Trump asked United States top intelligence official Daniel Coats, former senator, I believe, to pressure Comey to back off his investigation of Flynn. Mr. Mueller wants to ask Trump about his contact with Mr. Coats, as well as the CIA's director at the time, Mike Pompeo. Ta-da. And the National Security Agency's director, Michael Rogers. The conversations could reflect Trump's growing frustration with Comey, not about the Clinton case, as if that were even partially real, but about Comey's refusal to shut down the Russia inquiry. Next question. What did you think and do in reaction to the news that the special counsel was speaking to Mr. Rogers, Mr. Pompeo, and Mr. Coates? Now, this is another one of those questions that doesn't really reveal anything. It's not clear whether Mueller knows something specific about Trump's reaction to those interviews. But the question shows that Mueller is very interested in how Mr. Trump responded to each step of his investigation, of Mueller's investigation. Next question. What was the purpose of your calls to Mr. Comey on March 30th and April 11th, 2017? This comes because Comey said that Trump called twice to ask him to say publicly that he, Trump, was not under FBI investigation. In the second call, Mr. Comey said, the president added, quote, I have been very loyal to you, very loyal. We had that thing, you know, end quote. We had that thing. I mean, if that doesn't sound like a couple of gunsels with a mafia family. Hey, what about that thing? Yeah, I know that thing. You know, the guy said about that thing. Yeah, I remember what he said about. I mean, what the hell is going on here? Well, that's Trump. Trump is a thug. He's a criminal, a grifter. What was your purpose, or what was the purpose to your, of your April 17th, 2017 statement to Maria Bartiromo? She works for, of course, the Fox Business Network. Now, the White House ultimately said that Mr. Comey was fired for breaking with Justice Department policy and discussing the Clinton investigation. Jesus. Trump expressed no such qualms in an interview with Ms. Bartiromo on Fox Business Network. He said, quote, Trump said, Director Comey was very, very good to Hillary Clinton. That I can tell you. If he weren't, she would be right now going to trial. End quote. Next question. What did you think and do about Mr. Comey's May 3rd, 2017 testimony? That's when he appeared before the Senate. In that appearance, Comey described his handling of the Clinton investigation in detail. Comey was fired soon after that. Mueller's question suggests he wants to know why Mr. Trump soured on him all of a sudden. And again, you know, a good prosecutor, a good attorney does not ask a question he doesn't already have the answer to. You have the answer to that question, and so do I. Regarding the decision to fire Comey, next question. When was it made? Why? Who played a role? Over the past several months, Mueller has asked White House officials for the backstory and whether the public justification of firing Comey was accurate. He'll be able to compare Trump's answers to what he has learned elsewhere. Ooh, fun. Trump is so fucked. I would love to be sitting in if Trump submits to these questions. Oh my God, I'd love to be there. I hope they video it. It'd be great if they live streamed it on Facebook or Twitter or with some shit where everybody could see
on Fox
how this orange asshole was being gutted by the special counsel.
On Fox and Friends. They could simulcast it on C-SPAN and Fox and Friends, and Steve Ducci could sit there with that pained grin on his face going, okay, Mr. President, I guess it's time for you to go back to whatever it was you were doing.
Next question. What did you mean when you told Russian diplomats on May 10th, 2017, that firing Mr. Comey had taken the pressure off? Ooh. You remember that. The day after Comey's firing, Trump got together with these Russian killers in the Oval Office, and they had drinks and laughter, and everybody was having just a good old grab-ass time, just the boys there. And it was there the New York Times revealed that Trump suggested he had fired Comey because of the pressure from the Russia investigation. Trump said at the time, quote, I just fired the head of the FBI. He was crazy, a real nut job. I faced great pressure because of Russia. Now that's taken off. End quote. You goddamn moron. I mean, you really are, Trump. You are such a moron. Next question. Oh, and you know, that little incident really got to me as an American citizen, you might say. The fact that Trump allowed these Russians and Russian media, that's where we get this information, into this little circle jerk that Trump had with these Russian so-called diplomats. No American media was allowed. No Americans were in the office or in that Oval Office meeting. And I include Trump. He's not an American. He's not an American. I don't know what the fuck he is, but he's not an American. Next question. What did you mean in your interview with Lester Holt about Mr. Comey in Russia? And that was shortly after firing Comey, Trump undercut his own argument when he told NBC News that he had been thinking about the Russia investigation when he fired Comey. Trump is such an asshole. He cuts his own throat repeatedly. Trump said at the time, quote, I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it. And in fact, when I decided to do it, I just said to myself, I said, you know, this Russia thing with Trump and Russia is a made-up story. It's an excuse by the Democrats for having lost an election that they should have won. End quote. The moron. Next question. What was the purpose of your May 12th, 2017 tweet? Now, after the Times revealed Trump's private dinner with Comey, Trump responded on Twitter. Remember, he said something to the effect, before Comey starts leaking, he better wonder whether or not there were tapes of our little meeting, quote, quote. Well, Comey appeared unworried by that little pissy thread. He said, Lordy, I hope there are tapes. The White House ultimately said that, no, there were no tapes. But see, this is Trump's MO. This is how he operates. He threatens. He bloviates. He comes across like a goddamn junior wannabe in the mafia. He's a thug, a punk, and illiterate and stupid. And every time he opens his mouth, in addition to the lies and the bats and the animals that come tumbling out, he also cuts his own throat. Next question. What did you think about Mr. Comey's June 8th, 2017 testimony regarding Mr. Flynn? And what did you do about it? the context of this, after he was fired, Comey testified about his conversations with Trump before the Senate or the – I think it was the Senate – and described him, Trump, as being preoccupied with the FBI's investigation into Russia. And of course, after Comey testified, under oath, Trump called him a liar. Next, what was the purpose of the September and October 2017 statements, including tweets, regarding an investigation of Mr. Comey? Now, this is where Ms. Trunchbull, the White House press secretary, said that Comey had testified falsely to Congress. She said that, and suggested that the Justice Department might investigate. Mr. Trump followed up with tweets suggesting he should be investigated for rigging an inquiry into Mrs. Clinton. Those kind of comments reinforced criticism that Trump views the Justice Department as a sword to use against his political rivals. And as far as Sarah Huckabee Sanders, that poor miserable lump who got her ass roasted at the White House correspondence dinner on Saturday night, and then all this whining and bleating and, oh, poor Sarah Huckabee Sanders, horse shit. Sarah Huckabee Sanders stands up there every day and feeds through the American press just a steady stream of treasonous lies, bullshit, disruptive statements, falsehoods, misstatements. You know, to think that the comedian who went after Ms. Trunchbull at that correspondence dinner should feel anything but joy that she managed to get under the skin of the Trump administration is beyond me. But as far as Sarah Huckabee Sanders is concerned, go to hell, lady. You put the American public through this shit every day. Deal with it. God, what a whiner. Let's take a quick break here, Kathy. We'll be right back.
The unobtrusive tones on the news tonight. And mama said, why don't the newscasters cry when they read about people who die?
Okay, we're taking a look here at some of the questions that Mueller has for the Trump machine, as revealed by the New York Times' Michael Schmidt late last night. Next question, what is the reason for your continued criticism of Mr. Comey and his former deputy, Andrew McCabe? Now, the truth is, Comey and McCabe are among Trump's favorite targets. He just loves to go after him, doesn't he? McCabe is a lifelong Republican. Trump has criticized him as a Clinton loyalist because McCabe's wife, a Democrat, ran unsuccessfully for office in Virginia and received donations from a super PAC run by a Clinton ally, the former governor and former head of the DNC, Terry McAuliffe. See the connection there? It's a plot. This question suggests that Mueller wants to know whether Trump's criticism is an effort to damage the FBI while it investigates Trump's associates. Now, the next group of questions have to do with Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Boy, what a rat's nest this could turn out to be, right? Poor old goblin. He just sits over there at the Justice Department doing his thing. The first question about Sessions, what did you think and do regarding the recusal of Jeff Sessions? You remember that Sessions bailed out when it became apparent that he too had had contacts with the Russians. I mean, is it just you and me, Truth Seeker, who have to deal with the question of what the fuck did everybody associated with Trump have to do with the Russians during this election? What the hell was going on? Now, the brain-dead Trump base, the NRA hobbits, they don't give a shit. They couldn't care less. But you care and I care. See, the background for that question, Trump has criticized Sessions' recusal from the Russia investigation. And the New York Times reported earlier that Trump had humiliated Sessions, which Trump is good at doing, in an Oval Office meeting, and accused him of being disloyal. See, there's that mafia shit again, right? Sessions ultimately submitted his resignation, but Trump didn't accept it. Along with the next two questions, this inquiry looks at whether Trump views law enforcement officials as his personal protectors. We know the answer to that, don't we? Next question, what efforts did you make to try to get him to change his mind, you know, to not recuse himself? New York Times has reported that Trump told his White House counsel, Donald McGahn, to stop Mr. Sessions from recusing himself. Make him stop. Mr. McGahn was unsuccessful, and Trump erupted, saying he needed an attorney general who would protect him. That's when he said, "Where's my Roy Cohn?" One of the most criminal little snakes ever to exist. But that's what Trump wants, because that's what Trump is. Next question. Did you discuss whether Mr. Sessions would protect you and reference past attorneys general? The context for that question, Trump has spoken affectionately about past attorneys general who he said were loyal to their presidents. He cited Robert Kennedy and Eric Holder as examples. In a Times interview in December, Trump said, quote, "Holder protected the president, and I have great respect for that," end quote. Yeah, I'm sure you would. And as far as protecting the president, what does that mean? That's something that exists in Trump's fried brain. Next question. And what did you think and what did you do in reaction to the news of the appointment of the special counsel? Now, in a twist here, Mueller's very appointment has become part of his investigation. Trump has repeatedly denounced the inquiry as a witch hunt, which really pisses off all the world's witches. Trump blames the appointment on Jeff Sessions' recusal. Next, why did you hold Mr. Sessions' resignation until May 31st, 2017, and with whom did you discuss it? The context for that question, Trump rejected Sessions' resignation after aides argued that it would only create more problems. The details of those discussions are still unclear, certainly for you and me. But Trump's advisors have already given Mueller their accounts of the conversations. You see, in almost every one of these instances where questions are asked, where other people may have had the answers or may have been witness to the discussion or may have seen what the Trump moron was doing, all of that information Mueller already has. And this is what Trump's attorneys are freaked about, because they know Trump is a liar, first, last, and always. And they also know that Mueller will be asking all sorts of questions, the answers to which he already has. And since Trump is a liar, you could call this a perjury trap. Although, if you tell the truth, you're not going to get trapped. Ask Bill Clinton. Next question. What discussions did you have with Reince Priebus in July 2017 about obtaining the Sessions resignation? With whom did you discuss it? The context for that, Priebus, who is Trump's chief of staff, has said he raced out of the White House after Sessions and implored him not to resign. Don't do it, Goblin! Mueller has interviewed Priebus and would be able to compare his answers, Priebus's answers, with those of the orange asshole. Regarding that question, you notice how the rope just seems to be tightening, right? What discussions did you have regarding terminating the special counsel, and what did you do when that consideration was reported in January 2018? Now, again, Mueller's investigation intersects with its own existence. You know, Trump has been trying to get rid of him for God knows how long. The Times reported that in June 2017, Trump ordered McGahn to fire Mueller. McGahn refused. Though Mr. Trump's own advisors informed Mueller about that effort, Trump denied it. Fake news, he said. A typical New York Times fake story. End quote. What was the purpose of your July 2017 criticism of Mr. Sessions? If you remember, Trump unleashed a series of attacks on Sessions last July, which were just humiliating. I mean, especially for an old white Southern Christian male like Jeff Sessions to be kicked in the fucking face like that by a New York Yankee former Democrat criminal. That must have driven Sessions almost over the edge, but he didn't go. Next question. When did you become aware of the Trump Tower meeting? Now, this and other questions relate to that July 9th, 2016 meeting at Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer who offered political dirt on Hillary Clinton. Trump's eldest son, Donald Trump Jr., arranged the meeting. He said he didn't tell his father about it when it happened. Oh, no, I didn't tell Daddy. I was going to tell Daddy, but I didn't tell Daddy at the time. All right, we're coming up here on the top of the hour break. Let me mention one more time, Bob B., who sponsors the program tonight. His message, thank you, Mike and Kathy, for your passionate defense of the 99%. Thank you for sponsoring. This is the 50% sponsor special. Now I'm back to normal. Let's rock and roll. Get these sponsorships in here, okay? $50 for 2 hours. I'll read your message at least three times. It's the best deal on earth. And it'll help buy the gauze bandages. We'll take a break. I'll be back momentarily. Stay there.
And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways.
Yeah, let me mention again here at the top of the hour, our sponsor tonight is Bob B. First sponsorship for our fundraiser that we're doing in from now until the end of spring, which I guess is June 22nd. For $50 instead of $100, you get to sponsor 2 hours of the program, an entire program actually. And whatever message you send with your sponsorship, I'll read it at least three times. It's about the best deal on earth, and as I said last hour, it helps keep me in gauze bandages for the next foreseeable future, whatever. Jesus. I have to tell you, this damn thing still hurts. The only reason I'm working tonight is because Kathy said, get off your lazy ass and go to work. Oh, my God. No, she would never do that. But, yeah, it's not been very pleasant. But then surgery never is, right? Bob's message, thank you, Mike and Kathy, for your passionate defense of the 99%. You're welcome, and thank you for supporting it, Bob. All right, back to these questions. What's his name? New York Times, Michael Schmidt, released this last night at the Times website, about 48 or 49 questions that Robert Mueller wants to ask of this orange moron. And all the debate, all the questions, all the dialogue that's been going on how to do this, since everybody knows Trump is a liar and a thief and a crook. And his best defender right now, and this will speak volumes, is Sean Hannity. Sure, go ahead.
You used to call him the baby Jesus, Sean Hannity. Now he's going to be known as Michael Cohen's other client.
There you go. Sean Hannity speaks for Trump. You couldn't make this shit up. I mean, this is just, oh, well. Let me continue.
I mean, Hannity had his nose all the way up Newt Gingrich's butt for years, and now he just switched to another more fragrant rump.
That's true. Ooh. Okay. The next question that Mueller once answered, and these are directed at Trump. What involvement did you have in the communication strategy, including the release of Donald Trump Jr.'s emails? Now, the context for this, when the New York Times and then the rest of us found out about the meeting, the meeting at Trump Tower with all the Russians and the foreign agents and the spies and Manafort and all the criminals, Trump helped draft a misleading statement in his son's name, omitting the true purpose of that meeting. And after the Times obtained Trump Jr.'s emails, he real quick published them on Twitter, as if that makes a difference, right? You know, I've been saying for months now, this whole family is so fucked. These are people, none of them were ever, ever introduced to ideas of honesty and truthfulness and dignity and honor and respect. These are people whose motto is, gimme, motherfucker, gimme, just gimme. And then shut up. Disgusting. Next question. During a trip to Russia in 2013, what communication and relationships did you have with the Agalarovs and Russian government officials? Now, the Agalarov family is interesting. The boy in this family, Emin Agalarov, is a pop singer in Russia. His father, Aris Agalarov, is a billionaire and a music promoter and one of Putin's favorite thieves. The Agalarovs, along with the other so-called oligarchs — oligarch is a Russian word for fucking thief. That's what that means. When the Soviet Union collapsed, these people started snatching everything that wasn't nailed down. The Russian people were just left in the dust, and the so-called oligarchs grabbed and snatched and put things together with Putin's help, with the KGB or whatever the hell it's called, with their help. So apparently the Trump crime syndicate and the Agalarov crime syndicate had some dealings together, kind of like the Bonanno family and the Trafficante family, you might say. The Trump Tower meeting was arranged through that Russian, the boy, the Russian singer, Emin Agalarov, and his father. Mueller is looking hard at the nature of connections between the Agalarovs, Trump, and Russian officials. Don't leave little pissant Jared Kushner out of that little group either. I'm sure Mr. Mueller won't. Next question. What communication did you have with Michael D. Cohen, Felix Sater, and others, including foreign nationals, about Russian real estate developments during the campaign? Now, what that's all about is Mueller is referring to a failed effort to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. Oh, Mr. Sater, a business associate, proposed the idea to Mr. Cohen, the longtime personal lawyer of Mr. Trump, who's now being thrown under the bus by Trump. But anyway, emails show that Sater believed that the project would showcase Trump's deal-making acumen and propel him into the presidency. No, it was Trump's ability to focus the hate and the white nationalism and the fascism in this country into a presidential contest. Next question. What discussion did you have during the campaign regarding any meeting with Mr. Putin? Did you discuss it with others? Here's the deal on that one. Journalists and lawmakers have uncovered several examples, which means more than four or five, of Russian officials trying through intermediaries to arrange meetings between Trump and Putin because they want to make peace, right? Sure. Senior campaign officials for Trump rejected some of the overtures, But Trump's involvement, off the radar, you might say, has been a complete mystery. The answer to that question and the additional questions the answer raises will be very interesting. What discussions did you have during the campaign regarding Russian sanctions? Now, if you remember, right towards the end of Obama administration, even as Obama stepped up those sanctions on Russia, when it became clear what the bastards were doing in our electoral system, Trump still continued to praise Putin. Laudatory tone is the way it's put. Trump never, to this day, hasn't said a nasty thing like he does to Americans about Trump. Think about that, or about Putin. Think about that for a second. This piece of human waste, Trump, and his little butt boy, Sean Hannity. Now, Hannity was always Rush Limbaugh's butt boy, but I guess Hannity realizes that the king is dead, long live the king, and Hannity is making his bid for kingdom. But at no time has Trump used some of the derisive, nasty, ugly terminology on this Russian thug who has people killed who want to run against him, while at the same time he has used that kind of language on so many Americans, named and unnamed, people whose names we know and people who we don't, until Trump goes after them. Oh, this bastard. Calm down, Malloy. Calm down. Next question. What involvement did you have concerning platform changes regarding arming Ukraine? Now, this has to do with that mysterious meeting of the Russian, intelligence officials who went to the, where was it, in Cleveland? For the Republican convention when Trump was nominated. And all kinds of shit apparently went down under cover of that convention, which is a good way. If shit's going to go down, do it at a place like that. Don't try to go hide and meet in a park someplace and leave messages under rocks. No, no, just go to the Republican convention. And one of the things that must have happened during that convention was a complete about-face where it concerned the Russian attitude toward arming Ukraine. What happened was a portion of the Republican platform was changed in a way that made all that more favorable to Russia. So how many innocent people have died in that part of the world because of Trump and these monsters that are his posse and the Russians? It's just fucking unbelievable. Next question. During the campaign, what did you know about Russian hacking, Russia's use of social media, or other acts aimed at the campaign? Now, this one is an important question, and the reason for it is, remember when Trump shot off his goddamn mouth, praised the release of hacked Democratic emails, and called on Russia to find more? What a fucking idiot! I mean, I'm not defending him, but he is what he is. He stands up there and says that shit. Mueller's investigation also has unearthed evidence that at least one member of Trump's campaign, that would be the feckless George Papadopoulos, was told that Russia had obtained compromising emails about Mrs. Clinton. But Trump has repeatedly said there was no collusion with the Russian government. What the hell do you call that? Peanut butter? That's collusion, which is not against the law. Next question. What knowledge did you have of any outreach by your campaign, including by Paul Manafort, to Russia about potential assistance in your campaign? Now, as Michael Schmidt points out in the Times, this is one of the most intriguing questions on the list, because it's not clear whether Mueller knows something new, but there's no publicly available information linking Manafort, former campaign chairman, to such an outreach. So the inclusion of this question is significant. Manafort's longtime colleague, Rick Gates, is cooperating with Mr. Mueller. Of course he is. I won't go to prison. What did you know, next question, about communication between Roger Stone, his associates, Julian Assange, or WikiLeaks? Now, Stone made it very clear during the campaign that he had inside information from WikiLeaks, which published the hacked Democratic emails. And if you remember, he appeared to be able to predict future releases. Remember when he said that John Podesta's turn in the barrel was coming up? And sure enough, a few days later, emails were released that were embarrassing to Podesta. Nothing criminal about them, but they were embarrassing. This question then, what did you know about communication, Roger Stone, Julian Assange, WikiLeaks? This question, along with the next two, show that Mueller is still investigating possible campaign cooperation with Russia. Now, let me add an aside here that was not in last night's release by the New York Times. Late this afternoon, it was revealed that Mueller has asked the prosecutors in the case against against Mike Flynn. You know, that was the trial of that was supposed to begin either today or tomorrow or next week. But the prosecutors have now, on Mueller's instructions, asked for a delay in beginning that trial. And the only obvious conclusion that you can come to is that that I can come to anyway, is that Flynn has been holding back, waiting to see if he would get a signal from somebody in Trump's inner circle that he, Flynn, would not spend the rest of his life in jail. And apparently that signal hasn't come. So my guess is Mike Flynn, through his attorneys, got a hold of Mueller and said, listen, we have some more shit to tell you. We'll see. And the next two questions, here's the next one. What did you know during the transition about an attempt to establish back-channel communication to Russia and Jared Kushner's efforts in that regard? Yeah, Kushner is going to turn out to be one of the most easily manipulable little pricks ever to fall into the clutches of Russian intelligence. What a little jerkwad. Because the only thing Kushner cares about is money. He's another stupid shit who is part of the Trump family and therefore easily manipulable by people who know how to do it. And by God, the Russians know. Now, Kushner has testified that the Russian ambassador proposed getting Flynn in contact with Russian officials to discuss Syria. Right. In response, Kushner said, he proposed using secure phones inside the Russian embassy, referred to now as a highly unusual suggestion that was not accepted. Oh, gee, really? Next question. And this question is the second that show Mueller is investigating cooperation with Russia and Trump. The question is, what do you know about a 2017 meeting in Seychelles involving Eric Prince? Is that how you pronounce that, the Seychelles? Seychelles, involving Eric Prince. Now, you know who Eric Prince is, the founder of Blackwater, a private terror organization that murders people for despots and fascists around the globe. And Eric Prince's sister is the Secretary of Education. So what do you know about this meeting involving Eric Prince in the Seychelles? That meeting was convened by Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan of the United Arab Emirates. Jesus Christ. I can't wait for the movie. You know, Kathy, I can't wait for the movie. It brought Prince, an informal advisor to Trump's team, together with a Russian investor close to Vladimir Putin. A Russian investor close to Putin? Give me a fucking break. You mean another Russian intelligence agent is what you mean, of course. Next question. What do you know about a Ukrainian peace proposal provided to Mr. Cohen in 2017? Now, the context for this, Cohen the lawyer, as opposed to Cohen the business advisor, as opposed to Cohen the Sean Hannity property investment guru, Jesus Christ, Cohen the lawyer, hand-delivered to the White House. excuse me. Don't know where that came from. A peace proposal for Ukraine and Russia. Now, this unusual bit of backdoor diplomacy is of interest to Mueller because it involved a Ukrainian lawmaker who said he was being encouraged by Mr. Putin's aides. Mr. Cohen has said he did not discuss the proposal with Donald Trump. Oh, Christ almighty. All right. Those are the questions, apparently, that Robert Mueller is going to be very interested in getting answers from Trump. Now, whether or not he gets those answers, whether or not he even gets the sit down with Trump is still up in the air. Trump is such an arrogant prick who knows everything, who's the best at this and the best at that. I'm sure his advisors are telling him, if you go in there, Mueller is going to turn you into chopped liver. And I'm sure Trump is saying, fuck you, I can handle myself. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Jesus. All right, let's take a break, Kathy, if you don't mind. And we'll come back and continue this first program since I had my spine cut open. We'll be back in a moment.
No, his mind is not for rent.
While I was out, one of the things I noticed on television, and a lot of the stuff just floated through my field of vision in a kind of blurry way, but a big deal about John Tester, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. And I came to understand through a bunch of garbled information that Trump was real pissed at Tester. Because Tester released a memo documenting the various allegations made against Ronny Jackson, that moron, Trump's nominee to head the VA, various allegations made by whistleblowers. And those accusations range from Jackson writing himself his own prescriptions, which is a no-no, to being drunk on his ass on a foreign trip with then-President Barack Obama. Where in the hell was Obama? Jackson withdrew his name from consideration amid all this turmoil. But Trump continues to insist that Jackson is entirely innocent. They all are, aren't they, Donnie? They're all innocent. Everybody, all your criminal relatives and offspring and family and associates, they're all innocent, every one of them. And Comey is guilty. Now, Saturday night at a rally in Washington, this is when the White House Correspondents' Dinner was going on, which Trump always flees from that. Too much firepower at that Correspondents' Dinner for Trump to withstand. I mean, he had his ball singed off by Obama back in, what was it, 2011 or something? Remember that? Obama just kept hitting him and hitting him and hitting him, and Trump just got oranger and oranger and oranger. It was really something to see. But anyway, during that Correspondents Association dinner, Trump was in Michigan, where he was holding one of his campaign-style rallies, kind of like Hitler did. And he said this about Democratic Senator John Tester, quote, "I know things about the senator I can say, too. If I said them, he would never be elected again," end quote. Now, honest to God, doesn't that sound like some goddamn 8-year-old from your old neighborhood back when you were a kid? Huh? "I know things about you, Mary, and I'll tell your mom, and I'll tell everybody." You understand what's happening here. Sitting president of the United States told a crowd that he has information on a sitting U.S. senator that, if revealed, would guarantee that that senator would lose re-election this fall. It's staggering. Chris Saliza, CNN's editor-at-large, said what we know of all this is far less than what we don't know. So let's deal with that first. We know that Trump is angry at Tester because of the allegations made against Ronnie Jackson that Tester released to the public. Trump said on Saturday night, "They did that to Admiral Jackson. They're doing it for a lot of people." And what is that, Mr. Halfwit? We don't know. Trump, as usual, offered zero specifics, either in the speech or after it, to back up his charge against Tester. Remember what he said when Comey went public about Trump asking him to violate his constitutional oath where it concerned Mike Flynn? That was when Trump tweeted, "Comey, before you go leaking, you might consider if there are tapes." Remember that? And of course, there wasn't any. So, no specifics to back up his charge against Tester. The Trump White House has offered nothing as to what information the president possesses that would be devastating to Tester's chances of winning a third term in November. Trump is such an evil fucker. You know, he really is. He puts that shit out there in the brains of these robots who clap and cheer and stomp and yell for him. And that's all he has to do. Just drop a little gem like that into their addled brains, and he has them. This is what Limbaugh's been doing for 35 years. There are no news reports suggesting there's some kind of major bombshell waiting to be dropped on Tester. His Republican opponents haven't mentioned anything that hints at a skeleton in Tester's closet. Saliza writes, "Based on all available evidence, then, it seems as though Trump was simply talking without any proof of wrongdoing, as in the president, angry at Tester for what he believes was the bad treatment of a personal friend, was looking to score some rhetorical points and maybe put a little fear in the Democratic incumbent. So he threatened to have some information that would be hugely problematic for Tester's career, knowing full well he had nothing of the sort." This is Trump. Now, of course, this isn't the first time this asshole has done something like that as a candidate and as president. He has purposely used innuendo and rumor to further his political goals with these crazy fuckers that vote for him. And make sure we don't forget here, he suggested that Cruz's father might have been involved in John Kennedy's assassination. Reporters... and they'll never do this because I still don't believe that the White House press corps, the people that sit in there and listen to Ms. Trunchbull every day, really give a shit about what her answers are. They're asking the questions so the questions will go on the record. But reporters need to start asking what Trump meant when he said he knew things about the senator. What things? When did he learn them? Why wasn't he specific Saturday night about them? Of course, Ms. Trunchbull will brush aside any questions like that should they arise. And she'll insist that Trump was speaking broadly about Tester being out of step with a conservative-minded Montana, blah, 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 blah. But that's not what Trump said. He didn't talk about Tester's votes. He didn't talk about policy decisions. He said specifically this, quote, "I know things about the senator I can say, too. If I said them, he would never be elected again," end quote. Okay, asshole, tell us what are the things. You don't like Democrats, and they fucking hate you. So what's your story? Let's hear it. If you really know something, wouldn't it be in the best interest of Montanans to know it before they vote this fall? Come on, Trump. And if he doesn't know anything, which he doesn't, then he should be made to answer for why he said what he did. You know, Trump doesn't understand that as president of the United States, you can't just go around picking out individuals and slandering them without being called to account, which is what Michael Avenatti has made very clear to Trump with the Stormy Daniels situation. I hope Trump keeps insulting her, keeps saying shit, because it'll be another lawsuit until eventually. And this is where Avenatti has shown his genius in working with a dolt like Trump. Avenatti knows how to motivate Trump to open his fucking mouth. And that's just to keep applying the pressure, keep applying the pressure. And every time Trump comes up with one of his half-assed charges or comments about Avenatti's client, sue him. Hi. What else? Oh, also, this is insane, but it's part of the Trump penumbra. It's totally insane. Trump's former longtime personal doctor. Remember him? Dr. Harold Bornstein? Huh? Bornstein was Trump's personal physician for how long? I should have it right here. How long was he? Yeah, Bornstein has been Trump's personal doctor for more than 35 years. You got that? Okay. Now, in February 2017, according to NBC News, a top White House aide who is Trump's longtime personal bodyguard, you remember this guy? Schiller? Is that his name? Schiller? Yeah, Schiller. This guy, Schiller, along with the top lawyer at the Trump Organization and a third man, showed up at Dr. Bornstein's office in New York without notice and went into the office like gunsels, like mafia muscle men, which they are, and took all of the records out of Bornstein's office that had to do with Donald Trump's medical records, medical history. Took them all. Now, Dr. Bornstein described the incident as a raid. And it took place 2 days after Bornstein told a newspaper that he had prescribed a hair growth medicine for Trump for years.
Are you serious?
No, I'm serious. This is from NBC. No, this is not fake news.
This is why it was stolen?
Yeah. Matter of fact, this was on Ari Berman's show tonight. Anyway, in an exclusive interview in his Park Avenue office, Bornstein told NBC News that he felt, quote, raped, frightened, and sad, end quote, when Keith Schiller and another, quote, large man, end quote, came to his office to collect the president's records on the morning of February 3rd, 2017. At the time, Schiller, who had long worked as Trump's bodyguard, was serving as director of Oval Office operations at the White House.
He felt raped, what and what?
Frightened and sad.
kind of like Stormy Daniels.
Kind of like.
I think Trump just leaves every person he meets feeling raped, sad, and...
Frightened.
Frightened.
Yeah. Anyway, Bornstein said, as he described this incident, and he said it was frightening. He said, quote, they must have been here for 25 or 30 minutes. They went through everything. It created a lot of chaos. End quote. I mean, this is right out of fucking Goodfellas. This is your president, America. Christ. Bornstein said he was not given a form authorizing the release of the records. Oh, and signed by the president. That's the HIPAA release. You're familiar with that. You sign one when you go to your doctor, so that your doctor can release records to another physician if necessary. And that is in violation of patient privacy laws. But this is so fucking silly for me to sit here and say, well, that's a violation of law, and that's a violation of law, and this is a violation of law. When you work for the mob, there is no law. There's only what the capo di tutti capi says is law. And that's who Trump thinks he is. A person familiar with the matter said there was a letter to Bornstein from then White House Dr. Ronnie Jackson, but they don't know what was in that letter. And Dr. Bornstein only saw that letter after the Gunzels had left, after turning his office upside down. Bornstein said the original and only copy of Trump's charts, including lab reports under Trump's name, as well as under the pseudonyms his office used for Trump, were taken. Everything was taken. Now, check the date, February 2017. What did Ronnie Jackson say a few months ago after he, quote, examined, end quote, this orange asshole? He was in perfect health. He lived to be 200. Great genetic material. Really? What do you suppose Bornstein had? Another man, Trump Organization Chief Legal Officer Alan Garten. Now, the Trump Organization is Trump's phony fucking business and loan sharking operation. Anyway, Alan Garten joined Schiller's team at Bornstein's office. And Bornstein's wife, Melissa, photocopied his business card. Garten declined to comment when contacted by NBC. Well, I would hope to shout. He'll wind up in the fucking East River with cement booties, right? Schiller, who left the White House in September 2017, did not immediately respond to a request from NBC for comment. The White House did not respond to a request from NBC for comment. Now, Bornstein said that Trump cut ties with him after Bornstein told the New York Times that Trump takes Propecia, a drug for enlarged prostates. Oh, please, God, please, yes, please, please. Wait a minute, I don't believe in God. A drug for enlarged prostates that is often prescribed to stimulate hair growth in men. Bornstein told the Times that he prescribed Trump drugs for rosacea. That's a skin disease, right? Flare up, yeah. And cholesterol, high cholesterol as well. The story also quotes Bornstein recalling that he had told Rona Graff, Trump's longtime assistant, you know, I should be the White House physician. After the story ran, Bornstein called Graff. Or Bornstein said Graff called him and said, so you want to be the White House doctor? Forget it. You're out. You're fired. Can you imagine? Yeah, this Rona Graff. So you wanted to be the White House doctor? Forget it.
Forget about it.
You're out.
Propecia. Propecia this.
Fuck you.
And fuck you. Fuck me. Fuck you. Fuck me. Fuck you. God, this is madness.
2 days after that story ran, the Gunzels came to his office. Bornstein said, quote, I couldn't believe anybody was making a big deal out of a drug to grow his hair.
that seemed to be so important. And it certainly was not a breach of medical trust to tell somebody they take Propecia to grow their hair. What's the matter with that? End quote. If I had the time and you had the interest, Dr. Bornstein, I would tell you all sorts of things that are the matter with that. But let me proceed. Bornstein said he is speaking out now after seeing reports that Ronnie Jackson, you know, the candy man for handing out oxycodone and OxyContin and all this shit, the candy man. Oh, my fucking word. Since the candy man will not return to his post after being considered to run the Veterans Administration, Bornstein said, quote, "This is like a celebration for me," end quote. You know, hell hath no fury like a doctor scorned where it concerns being White House physician, right? But anyway, Jackson, of course, has denied improperly prescribing drugs. What's he going to say? Oh, yeah, I handed out handfuls of oxycodone. They're really strange drugs. Ask Mike Malloy. He'll tell you about oxycodone. Shit makes you crazy.
And by the way, Trump's in perfect health. Excellent health. Couldn't be healthier. Healthiest president that's ever lived.
Right. Oh, now, again, Bornstein, who's 70 years old, has been Trump's personal doctor now for more than 35 years, for Christ's sake. And during Trump's campaign, Bornstein wrote a letter declaring, quote, unequivocally, that Trump would be the healthiest president in history. He called Trump's health, quote, astonishingly excellent, end quote. Yeah, go ahead, Kathy.
Isn't it just creepy as hell that both these weird-ass doctors have said the same thing? And we're looking at a man who obviously abuses, you know, food and melanin products and suntanners and God knows what other chemicals he pumps into his scalp. And, you know, he doesn't look like a real healthy guy.
No, when you cut...
But they both swear he's just...
When you cut all the orange paint and the white shit under his eyes to cover up those sacks, yeah, he doesn't look very healthy at all. Can you imagine what Trump looks like in the morning when he first wakes up?
I mean, No. Never mind.
Oh, my God. Astonishingly excellent health. Healthiest president in history. You know, let me just give you a quick little personal anecdote about a little chat I had with my surgeon before he went to work on me. About a week before the surgery, I was in for the pre-op meeting and, you know, the anesthesiologist and the surgeon and talk about, you know, where they tell you everything's going to be okay, but you might die. You know, they have to give you those numbers. If it's a reputable surgeon, there is no hesitation in telling you the risks involved in your surgery. Anesthesiologists would tell you the same thing. And apparently I had a 1 in 200,000 chance of dying from anesthesia reaction. Well, obviously it didn't happen, but that's not the story. The story is I asked the surgeon, a youngish guy, what would you say his age is, Kathy, the surgeon? Mid-40s, early 50s? Late 40s, early 50s. Excellent rating, you know, certified this and that and everything. But because trust me, Kathy did a real good search on finding the right surgeon. But at one point near the end of our conversation, I said to him, you know, I want to be perfectly frank with you here. At my age, given my age, does that increase the risk of going under general anesthesia? Because I had heard, you know, when you're over 70, you run some risk with more so than somebody 50 going under general anesthesia. And he looked at me and he said, let me tell you something. He said, I would rather operate on an 80-year-old in your condition than a 50-year-old who doesn't take care of himself. And I almost said, you mean like Donald Trump? But I didn't because I didn't know the surgeon's politics. But that comment, I'm not saying that just to say, ooh, look at you, Mike, you're in good shape. No, I'm just saying though there are realities here, once you get past that magical marker of 70, there really are. There's some stuff that begins to happen, whether you want it to or not. And the degree to which that stuff is going to affect you depends on how you took care of yourself during the first 70 years. You understand what I'm saying? So somebody like Trump, when you look at Trump and you see this bloated, barely able to move, gross individual who just kind of thuds along, he can't trot up the stairs to his airplane the way Obama used to. He can't even trot coming down. Every time you see him and Melania together, it's like she doesn't want to take his hand. I'm sure it's puffy and sweaty from his poor physical health. What? You didn't say that. You said that on – have you been into my Percocet? Anyway, Bornstein was asked how he could justify saying that Trump would be the healthiest president ever, given just how Trump looks, for Christ's sake. And Bornstein said, quote, "I like that sentence, to be quite honest with you, and all the rest of them are either sick or dead," end quote. What does that mean? I like that sentence, to be quite honest with you, and all the rest of them are either sick or dead, end quote. I mean, this is just, I'm getting tongue-tied again, because I can't understand, process, or figure out any of this stuff. I'll be right back.
Taking on the world.
A dirty paper using sex to make her sad. The Supreme Court was so upset they sent him off to jail. Maybe we should help the fiend and take away his
file. You know, going back to the White House correspondence dinner on Saturday night, I have a new hero, and that would be Michelle Wolf, who gave, right back in the face of these Trump bastards, what they've been putting out, and national media has been assisting in putting it out for the past 3 years. Michelle Wolf says she has no regrets about her speech at the dinner, despite the backlash that she's faced for the comments that she made about, among others, Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Kellyanne Conway. You know, the gruesome twosome. Those two, Miss Trunchbull and I don't know what to call Kellyanne Conway. I won't. Anyway, she told NPR in an interview that aired today, quote, "I wouldn't change a single word that I said. I'm very happy with what I said, and I'm glad I stuck to my guns," end quote. She said she wasn't expecting the level of controversy that has swirled since her performance. But she said, "I'm also not disappointed that there is this level." She went on, she said, quote, "I knew what I was doing going in. I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to cater to the room. I wanted to cater to the outside audience and not betray my brand of comedy," end quote. And bless you for that, Michelle Wolf, because what she did was just kick the asses of the White House press corps for their blandness and their inability to see someone like Trump and call the son of a bitch what he is. I may talk more about Michelle Wolf tomorrow. Right now, that's it for me. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.